We're learning Melachim Aleph. We're toward the end of the second parak. I'm working on the copying machine. So God willing, it'll be perfect for next week's new packet, for the third chapter. And I was just given that position a few minutes ago. So, you know, I have to work myself into that. Anyway, let's begin on page 24. Even we saw a few of these sentences, Pasuk of Ches. We now have Shlomo, who is the new king, and some of the things that he has to be cautious about, and for those that were listening to this past Shabbos, Haftorah was actually the beginning of this parak, during David's last days giving words of advice to his son. Now David has passed away, and one of the things that we saw last week was Shlomo immediately taking action and being involved in various punishments of those people who deserve to be punished. So now we're going to see what the response of Yoav. Vashmu Abba in Pasuk of Ches, verse 28, page 24. Vashmu Abba ad Yoav, and this rumor came to Yoav, ki Yoav not achre odinia, the achre of Shalom lo nata. So Yoav has already heard, now that Shlomo is new king, he's cleaning house. He's making sure that any person who potentially could be a threat to his throne is removed. And he heard all these other things that had occurred, how he immediately responded to Adoniyahu, that Adoniyahu was killed, which was his brother. And the reason why is, we said, because he wanted Avishag HaShunamis as a wife, which on the surface doesn't sound like a big deal, but Avishag HaShunamis was David's electric blanket of some sort, but it wasn't his wife. But nonetheless, it was comparable to taking the scepter or the throne of a king, that only the successor has a right to take such things. And therefore, Shlomo looked at that as a direct threat to the throne. It was the first steps in the wrong direction. He had him killed. Yoav, who had sided with Adoniyahu, heard what was going on, and therefore Yoav was scared for his life. Now, even though the Pasuk says, in Pasuk of Ches, that he rebelled and he was together with the rebellion of Adoniyahu, Achrei Avshalom lo nata, he did not have anything to do with the previous rebellion of Avshalom, which is another one of David's sons, we learned about in the previous Sefer in Shmuel Beis. He had nothing to do with that. And perhaps for that alone, he thought that would be enough, that the new king, Shlomo, would show a little bit of rachmanus on him. Vayonas Yoav el Ohel Hashem, v'chazek b'karnas mizbeach. And we discussed this, that Yoav ran toward the Ohel Hashem, to this tent, to the Mishkan, and he grabbed hold onto the corners of the mizbeach. The karnos is also just the horns. And apparently he did this, as we saw, for a few reasons. We'll see this at greater length in the Radak shortly, but on a simple level, he was hoping that this would cause Shlomo to have some compassion, that you want to kill me, but look, I'm connecting myself to God, I'm connecting myself to spirituality, to holiness, so don't kill me. And that was the hope. But we'll see, even though he does this, Shlomo doesn't really care. Vayugad l'melech Shlomo kinas Yoav el Ohel Hashem. It was brought to the king's attention that Yoav went to the Ohel Hashem. V'hinei eitz al mizbeach, and he's right by the mizbeach, which, as we alluded to last week, it's almost like a child playing tag, and this is base, and I'm safe. We'll see exactly the significance of that, which we touched upon already, but we'll see this at greater length shortly in the Radak. The Yishlach Shlomo es ben Yoav ben Yoyada leimor leich pagaboy. So Shlomo appointed ben Yoav ben Yoyada, as he had done before, to do the dirty work and to kill Adoniyahu, which we saw already in Pasuk of Hay. And even though ben Yoav ben Yoyada was a Kohen was allowed to do this, either because he didn't actually kill him, but he like stabbed him, let him die, walked away, so he actually didn't come in contact with a dead body, or a Kohen is allowed to do this and even kill someone because it's under the orders of the king. And therefore he's allowed to follow those directions. So here ben Yoav ben Yoyada again is instructed to take Yoav, to forcefully remove him from the Mizbeach, to forcefully remove him from the Ohel Hashem, and to bring him that he should stand before the king to be judged, and we can all imagine what the verdict will be death. V'yavo ben Yohoyada el Ohel Hashem, so ben Yohoyada ben Yohoyada did exactly as the king asked him to do when he went to the Ohel Hashem, where Yoav was hiding. V'yomer Elov, and he said to him, Koymer HaMelech, this is what the king said, say, get out of here. You can't stay here anymore. This is what the king ordered, and you have to listen to whatever the king said. The Yomer, so what does he say? He knows why he's being asked to leave. He said, Lo, ki po omos. I know I'm going to die. I know I'm going to be killed by the king. I know that's why you want me to leave this Mizbeach and this Ohel Hashem. No, I'm not leaving. Well, what's the worst thing you're going to do? You can kill me? I'd rather die here. Ki po omos. I'd rather die where I am right now than for me to have to die in the palace after the verdict that the king gives. V'yoshev ben Yahu es HaMelech and ben Yo ben Yodo. Can you imagine? He was so shocked and surprised that someone would be so against the direct command of a king. And he turned this matter Dover Lamor to the king, saying, Ko diver Yoav, ko anani. This is what Yoav said, and this is how he answered me. This is his response.
This is how he answered me.
Right. Basically, this was, he relayed to him the entire dialogue. This is what I said to Yoav, and Yoav said back to me, and he basically said verbatim exactly as it happened. So let's see one more.
Can I just ask you one question? Going back to Pasuk Kaf Ches, when they mention Adonai Yahu's name, they just say Adoniyah. Is there any reason? I mean, is there?
Yeah, there's sometimes his name is just his name is not fully Adonai Yahu, and sometimes it's Adoniyah. The very first time he's introduced, which is the very beginning of Perek Aleph, which we don't have in front of us anymore, he's called Adoniyah ben Chagis. So it doesn't call him Adoniyahu. But in other times, we call him Adoniyahu. I'm not sure exactly the reason why sometimes it just changes back and forth. But, so it's another name that he has. But it certainly is the same person. So let's see one more pasuk, and then we'll understand this a little bit better. So, V'yomer lo HaMelech. So imagine the king hears this. So he said, you know what? He's in the Ohel Hashem. He's done tshuva. He's by the Mizbeach. Maybe I should just forgive. I should pardon him already. You know, obviously he's changed. Oh, he went to the Mizbeach. He's there. So he's this. Who knows? I mean, maybe this is the mindset of Shlomo. Shlomo doesn't say that. He says, Asei kasher diber. Do exactly as he requested. Upagabo ukivarto. And you should encounter him, which means you kill him right where he is. I don't care where it is. I don't care if I have to walk into the holiest building, the holiest sanctuary. That's where bloodshed will have to take place. What choice do I have? That's where he'll be killed. Ukvarto, and we'll bury him in that vicinity. Therefore, it'll be removed, the blood, the innocent blood in which he spilled, that Yo spilled upon for myself as well as my father's home. In other words, as we mentioned before, Yoav, although he was a very powerful military man, he obviously was involved in a lot of bloodshed because he was obligated to do so. There's other things that he was not supposed to do. He took the lives of two great men, Avner ben Ner, and also of Amasa ben Yeser, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and he did that. They did that incorrectly without the command of the king, and therefore for that reason a punishment he will certainly receive. And therefore do exactly as was wished and desired, and there he will be punished. No problem. So before we move on to Pasuk Mem Beis, we can turn back to page 24. If we look at this lengthy redak over here, so before we see the lengthy redak, if you look at Rashi in Pasuk Lamed, okay, the very last Rashi on page 24, Vayomer Lo. So when he said, go to the king, which say, I want you to leave this place. Yoav, don't stay anymore. The king Shlomo has asked that you should go. And lo, he said no. So what does that mean? No. Well, you have no right just to refuse. Right? You have to listen to the king. So Rashi makes a very interesting point over here, which is something very quite fascinating, which reminds us of something which we learned previously. Rashi says, "Shtayim lo kabel alai." Two things I'm not accepting upon myself. Two punishments is not fair. What do you mean two punishments? He knew that he was going to be killed. But Yoav viewed a previous punishment as a way to fit the crime that he had committed. Therefore, he felt it was not right for him to be punished, even though he has already received a punishment, in which in English, I think, is called double jeopardy, right? So it's not fair. But this is the same concept that's being introduced over here. Now, once you commit a crime and you're punished for that crime, so you cannot get punished for that same crime a second time, right? There's actually a very fascinating book called Double Jeopardy about someone who, that the husband, this woman was framed for having killed her husband, and the husband really wasn't killed, and she was sentenced to jail, got out of jail, and started stalking her husband, and she was allowed to kill him in broad daylight because she couldn't get punished for the same crime twice. Anyway, I'm not saying it was a good book, but it was an interesting premise. Vayomer lo, so it's Rashi says, Shtayim lo kabbalah, I'm not going to get two punishments. Klolos, what was the first punishment? I was cursed. Not only was I cursed, but the curse is, Shekalani David Avicha b'misas Avner, when it came to when I killed Avner, the Pasuk mentions at the end of Shmuel Beis that I was cursed. Yekablum Shlomo Olav. So Shlomo, accept those things upon me, v'achar kach etzei, and then afterwards let me go out. In other words, what is being said, and if you look in English on page 25, the very bottom right corner, it quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is what we just read inside. The sages present other reasons for Yoav's stubbornness. Yoav protested to Shlomo that it was unfair for him to be punished twice for his crimes. After he had killed Avner, David uttered a devastating curse against him and his posterity. So his children would be cursed as well. So to that, he felt was the punishment that he deserved for the crime that he had committed for having killed Avner, even though he shouldn't have. Now Yoav pleaded, if Shlomo insisted on having him executed, it would be only fair for Shlomo to remove the curse from Yoav and accept it upon himself. Shlomo accepted Yoav's plea, as reported in the following verse, do as he said. And if you look, I was just reading from the bottom, now on page 26, that what Yoav was asking was, if you're going to kill me, then you have to remove the first curse, the first punishment. So, obviously, I'm going to be cursed because I'm going to be killed. That's a pretty bad curse. But he was concerned about the curse of his descendants, his children. So he said, you have to think this out, Shlomo. If you're going to kill me, then that will be my punishment. And then the first punishment of being event that my descendants will be cursed, you have to remove. And if you look at this Rashi on page 26, Asa Kasher Diber, what does it mean that Shlomo said, do exactly as Yoav requested? So Rashi says, Ani Mekabla Melai, that curse that I gave to Shlomo, that Shlomo gave to, or David, my father, gave to Yoav, I will now have to accept that curse. Because that curse is out in the air. The curse has to go to someone. I will be mekabel the curse. I'll accept it. And he'll be killed. That will be his punishment. But there will no longer be a curse upon his descendants. If you look at Rashi, Rashi shows that this is in fact what happened to David's descendants. That David's children were cursed. Ani mekabel emulai lakach nidbuku kol all of Zerah David. That's why all of these punishments and curses befell the seed of David. Uzziah, these are all people who descended from David. Uzziah hay mitzoyre. So Uzziah was someone who had sarasi, had this skin disease, mistranslated as leprosy. Asa machzik bepelach. Asa was someone, this is all later stories, couldn't walk. Yoyakum nafal becharev. Yoyakum is connected to David. Fell by the sword. And the Chaser Lechem Sidkiyahu. Sidkiyahu was missing bread. He was starving. Right, so all these different things befell David because, and this was the ultimatum, if you will, that was being presented to David by Yoav. He said, you know, you can't punish me twice. You already gave me this eventual curse of my descendants, so you could either remove that and kill me, or you have to let me live. And then my curse, the curse will remain upon my children.
What Shlomo did was, he did his posterity. He put this all on others. That's not fair. If you want to say, I'll accept your curse on myself,
right,
is one thing. But how could he do it for his descendants?
Right.
I don't think
that was the curse was on your...
Was on Noah's descendants.
Right,
so
that was...
he accepted on him.
That was...
Right. And
you're right.
They say all the time, like, killing doesn't necessarily mean killing. When they say that Jacob's daughter was killed, they say, well, she wasn't married. She was put
right.
away. I mean, not
right.
actually. So we could have maybe found a solution.
And just,
to
strengthen your question, we're going to see in a moment that when it came to another person, when it came to Shimi, that's precisely what he does. He puts him in house arrest. He does that. And to him, that was... sufficient. That was good enough. For some reason, he felt obligated to have Yoav killed. Which is, you're right, it doesn't seem fair that he accepted that curse, which included the punishment on his children. You could also ask the question, how could there be a curse at all? So Yoav made a mistake, so why should Yoav's children suffer? And that's another question you can ask.
Right. So they say that they wouldn't have the curse if they themselves didn't deserve it at the time.
Right.
But I'm confused on this one. I don't know if anybody else is. How does David, his genealogy come into this? How does that come into this? I'm confused on that.
David's...
Shlomo accepted it on himself.
It's Shlomo's father.
When David cursed Yoav, he cursed his descendants. When Yoav said to Shlomo, you can't do me double jeopardy. David already cursed my descendants, so you can't kill me.
Right.
So Shlomo said, I take away that curse that David did on your descendants, and I accept it on myself, on my descendants, and I'm going to kill you. So you only have one
right.
punishment.
Right.
So David accepted Shlomo. Right. That's what I'm saying. Shlomo accepted the curse of
Shmuel Beis,
that David gave to your descendants as a punishment. Right, that's what it's saying here.
Shlomo accepted
Yoav, because otherwise he wouldn't have been able to kill Yoav. He wanted to kill Yoav.
But how could he accept the curse on his future generation?
Well, that was the question.
That's what I just asked.
That was the question.
So
that
the
was
answer
the...
what some people give is that the curse would not have been fulfilled if the people who didn't deserve it.
Right. So it could be a certain level of rachmim that Hashem normally would show, so that Hashem just overlooks and lets the natural course of punishment take place. But you know, this is just that's an insight that Rashi provides for us. Okay, now the Radak gives us a different approach. Now, if we go back to page 24, there's a few lines over here, but it's worthwhile maybe skip a line or two. But if we begin with Pasuk Lamed, so the Radak previously, which we saw, discussed the significance of why he was holding on to the Mizbeach. And the Gemara in Makos gives the impression that if you hold on to this comparable to the cities of refuge, which did exist even then, in the days of Yeshua, if Moshe built three, Yeshua built another three after he crossed the Jordan. But nonetheless, the Mizbech was some form of refuge and protection that no one was allowed to harm you if you were attached to the Mizbech. Apparently that was one interpretation, that's what it does. However, that only accomplishes is if you killed Beshogeg. In other words, if a person wants to go to the city of refuge, but you're a mass murderer, right? You're a Ted Bundy or whatever, you can't run to the city of refuge and not be harmed. The Beis Din has a right to take you out because you did commit crimes, bemazed, you did it premeditated, it was done on purpose, so you're sentenced to death. Cities of refuge, the Ari Mikolot, only protects someone who is Beshogeg, I was negligent, manslaughter, different category, exactly what is a Beshogeg. If you do it on purpose, it doesn't protect you. Similarly, the Mizbeach does not protect you if you killed someone b'mezid. If you killed someone on purpose, it doesn't help. And Yoav, his mistake, let's just see this, let's see this Radak in Pasuk Chaf Tes. Kamo she'omer shehichzik b'karnos ha-Mizbeach, this is the Radak, he held on to the horns of the corners of the altar. Yom Rabbeinu Zal, our rabbis teach us, ki b'davar zeh tal Yoav. Yoav made a mistake. The Mizbeach only protects El Al Shgaga, only when a person kills Bishogeg, negligently or through manslaughter. But when it came to Yoav, Yoav killed these two people, Bemezid, on purpose. It wasn't an accident. Not only was it not an accident, but if you remember, he did it in a way which kind of tricked them to put them in a vulnerable position, and he killed them. By one, his sword accidentally dropped out of his holder. He picked it up, so the person just thought he was picking up his sword. But when he picked up his sword from the ground, he killed him. And the other person, he asked him a question. This is brought down in Rashi that we saw, that what happens when it comes to chalitza, in the event that, God forbid, a husband passes away and they're childless, the woman does not want to marry his brother. Instead, chalitza is performed with removal of the shoe. What happens if the woman has no hands? That's what Yoav asked. And so the person bent down so as to show how a woman potentially can remove a shoe even without the ability of having hands. And when he was down, he killed him. So this is all b'mezid. He did this not only on purpose, but with trickery as well. So now let's look in the words of the Radak, Pasuk Lam. This is what I want to see. Lo, ki po amos. I'm not leaving, said Yoav. I'm going to die here. So Omar Cain, why did he say this? Kidei la'anish Shlomo. He wanted Shlomo to get punished. Lefi machshavto, because he thought, she'argu b'mizbeach Hashem. The fact that he's going to kill me in such a holy place, and to, on some level, to defile the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach, we know the Beis HaMikdash is only built by Shlomo because it represents peace. So you're not allowed to have bloodshed in such a place. You're not allowed to have violence in such a place. So the fact that he's going to kill me, you want to kill me here? Fine, I'll die, but you're coming down with me. If I'm going to drown, I'm going to pull you down together with me. And that was one interpretation of Yoav's intention. You want to kill me? Kill me here. And when I die here, so will the king. He will not live very long. He'll be punished for having harmed me in such a holy place. Continues the Radak. V'razal, and the rabbis teach us, and quoting the Gemara which we saw already, says, Mehem amru ki harugi malchus nichseihem l'melech. When it comes to a king that kills someone, if you're sentenced to death by a king, not only do you lose your life, but as an added bonus, you lose all your possessions too. Everything goes to the king. He didn't want to leave. That was the sensitivity, the greatness of Yoav. We'll see how great he is, unbelievably so, shortly, when it alludes to it in his death, which he will certainly die. But we see that he was so selfless that he knew he was going to die, but at that moment, he was thinking about his children. He was thinking about his descendants. He wanted to make sure that they have whatever they can potentially need to be able to survive and to live a comfortable life. And therefore, he said, kill me here, because if you kill me here, I was just killed by randomly. Since I wasn't given a fair trial in front of the king, you would not be allowed legally to take my possessions away, and therefore they must go to my children. That's why the Radak says it should be given, I should be killed here. Omer Shlomo Levinyahu. So why am I saying this now? Why do we have to flip back? Because there's actually a lot more behind the scenes that the Radak teaches us based on the sentences we just saw. Shlomo Hamel turns to Binyahu after he heard this conversation. This was really what transpired. Because when we saw in Pasuk Lamed, it says, oh, this is what I said to him, and so he answered me. So obviously, what does that mean? I mean, it's more than just the sentences. What Binyahu went back to Shlomo was, he went back and says, you know what? He wants you to kill him there because he knows that your intention is to take his money. He knows that the reason why you want to kill him in your palace is so that you take all his possessions. So says the Radak, that Shlomo turned back to him. What are you talking about? The chilum of monu anitzarach. You think I really care about his money? You think I care about his possessions? I mean, I'm a king anyway. I'm not poor. I don't care about taking his possessions. Asik kasher diber lupagabo. Do as he wants and kill him there. So why did he say it that way? As though to say, umehem amru ki nichseim liyarshim, that let all his possessions go to his heirs. Kamo harugi beistin. Umashi amar lo kipo amus lo amar eloch. Okay, that's the first explanation. So he said, go ahead, kill him there. And as though he's saying, you know, of course I can get like a whole bunch of people and physically remove him and handcuff him and put him into a car and drive him over to my palace. But in order to get his money, I don't want his money. And to prove it, just kill him there. It doesn't make any difference. That's one interpretation. Then the Radak says, Mashal Mash Omar, lo ki po amos, there he shall know I want to die here, which is what Yoav said. Lo amar el chat. This is an unbelievable sentence, the Radak. Why did he say, let me die here? So he probably knew that he was not going to live. So, but why did he say this? I want to die here. Because he knew that Binyahu would be shell-shocked. He wouldn't know how to respond. So he'd have to say, okay, hold that thought. I'm going to go to the palace. I need to speak to the king. I don't know what to do. Should I physically remove him? Or should I kill him there? Why did he say that? You're going to die anyway. You're going to die, so who cares? And this is a very, very powerful sentence, the Radak says. What was the motivation of Yoav for saying that? And this is, we're five lines from the bottom. Ela l'chayisha, for the living an hour. L'harich b'chayav, that I should be able to have a longer life. Ad she'elach ben Yahu l'shlomo b'yoshev. By the time that ben Yahu leaves me, goes to the king, speaks to the king, and comes back, I will have lived one more hour on this earth. Which obviously shows us the value of the moment, the greatness of a moment. And certainly during that hour, that's an hour which he potentially could have done tshuva, but we see that, and not to get into all the laws of euthanasia, right? But certainly we see the value of the human life. That even though, and there's of course major differences between that and a person who is Rahman al-Atslan in a hospital, in the emergency, you know, in the intensive care unit, but this person will die in an hour. Or this person will die this second. This person did whatever potentially could do in order to at least survive and live even a short amount of time. That's how important life is. And that's the message that Yoav is teaching us. That even just to buy a few more seconds, that perhaps could make all the difference. Now obviously you can learn it on a more practical way and just say that hopefully, you know, if I spend an extra hour, hopefully within an hour maybe the king will change his mind and maybe I'll live. That's also possible. Continues the Radak. Olav b'divrayim zal, the fourth line down the Radak. The chiyoav shohayachachem gadol v'rosh Sanhedrin. Shnemar, he quotes the pasuk. Lo haya yodeya shekasa b'torah v'chiyazit ish areihu l'hargu b'arma mi'imizbechi tikachenu amus. The pasuk says that if a person commits a crime, you're going to be sentenced to death. And the fact that you attach yourself to a mizbeach will only help if it's done bishogeg. It says it explicitly in the sentence. If you kill someone and it's premeditated, it was on purpose, then they're certainly going to be killed. So, what, Yoav didn't know that? What was he doing grabbing hold of the mizbeach? It's not possible he did not know this law. That's the question, but even within the question, it emphasizes a very important point. Yoav was not just some terrible person, some barbaric, violent warrior. The pasuk describes him, we describe him, Yoav does, and the Radak does, he's a chacham gadol, a tremendous scholar. Rosh Sanhedrin, the head of the Jewish court. This is not a simple person at all. So that's important for us just to keep that in mind. But the question is, so why did he do it? What was the intention? He knew that he would be killed anyway, So if you skip to the second to last line, about the 10th word, Ela Omar Yoav, Yoav said, Harugi based in Einik Varim Bekivra Avoseihem. This we talked also about. When a person is killed by Beisdin, Einik Vareihem Bekivra Avoseihem, they are not buried together in their ancestral plot, Elohim Atzmam, but rather themselves. Mutavli Shomus Khan, I'd rather die here, the Ekvar Bekivra Avosai, to be able to be buried among my fathers in my cemetery. The Zehu Shomar Lo Kipo Almos, I want to die here. Vladas Balze Hedrish Batam Ukivarto. That's what it means, and bury him. Bury him over there. Yafa, that's fine. Kaloimar Pagasham, kill him there. Kidvarov, as he requested, Ukivarto, Bikivriavosa, let him be buried in his father's home. That if he would be sentenced to death by the courts, by the king, then you'll be buried together with all the worst criminals imaginable. They have all these wonderful cemeteries, which is with honor and kavod, where your families are buried, in which a person wants to have that dignity and respect, and so that their children will look and say, you know what, okay, I had a great father, I had a great grandmother, whatever. But to be buried in a cemetery which is with all the worst criminals imaginable, right? Which I'm sure like some prisons they have cemeteries, right? People die in prison. So where are they buried? A lot of them probably are buried pretty close to the jail together with all the worst criminals in the world. Who would want to be buried in such a situation? It would be a bush, it would be a humiliation. And therefore that's the other reason why he wanted to be killed there, so that he would not be buried in a less than dignified place. So that's all the different explanations as to this dialogue between Benyahu and Yoav. And Shlomo said, fine, no problem. You can die, we can kill him there, and that's not a problem. Okay. Let's now move on to the psukim and continue on the next page, on page 26, with Pasuk Lamed Beis. Ve'heshiv Hashem es damo al rosho, that Hashem will return the blood upon his head. Asher paga b'shnei anashim, that he chanced and killed two people. And those two people were tzaddikim, very holy, righteous people. V'toivim imenu. And those two people that he killed, which the Pasuk is going to mention that in a second, they were even better than he was. How does Shlomo know that they were better than he was? We'll see in a second. Yahargim b'cherev. And he killed him with a sword. So you can't tell him that it was an accident, it was a face, you were driving, and he hit some black ice or something. He killed him with a sword. I mean, obviously, it was done on purpose. Not only that, but it's even worse, is Avi David lo yada. My father, David, didn't even know about this. My father, David, was not informed. Whereas he went and did this without the king's permission. And by doing that, it showed that he did whatever he wanted to do. And who did he kill? It's Avner ben Ner, Sarsava. It's no simple person. It's Sarsava, the commander of the army of Yisrael. It's Amasa ben Yeser, Sarsava Yehuda. And he killed Amasa ben Yeser, who was also the commander of the army of Yehuda.
I think also it says that David lo yada, that David didn't know, but that the people didn't know that David didn't know, and that they blamed David for this also.
That makes sense. That's very good. Right. So by doing this, it kind of shifts the blame off of David.
Right.
That's a good point. Okay. So if we look in the Radak, there's more, but we'll just skip a little bit here. Pasuk Lamed Beis, the Radak, it says, Tzadikim v'tovim imenu. How do I know that this person is a bigger tzaddik? So the Radak says, I'll tell you how I know. This is the last medium-sized line. Shloshavchu dam noki, because they never killed anyone. They never killed an innocent man. Kamosha shavachu, as he did. The Asher shahayu lehem milus yiseris lov. It's possible they have other good qualities. I just don't know what they are. But certainly, one thing that makes these two men, Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yesna, stands out from Yoav, is that Yoav killed innocent people, them, as opposed to them, Avner and Amasa, never killed an innocent man. They killed people. They certainly were, they were involved in a lot of death and bloodshed and various battles that they were involved in, but they never killed someone who was innocent as he did. And therefore, that makes them tzaddikim v'toyvim mimenu. They're better people than he is. And the Radak, we skip a couple of lines over here. The third wide line, you see in parentheses, is the word sham, and then it says like this, which is about the third wide line in the middle. Afalpi, even though sham elhem sha'ol bepeh laharug lo ratzuhim. Sha'ol commanded these gentlemen, both Avner and Amasa, to kill, namely Uriachiti, and they realized that Uriachiti didn't deserve to die, just because Uriachiti, his wife, was someone that David wished to marry, so they felt that it was incorrect. I'm not going to listen to the king. If I know the king's wrong, I'm not listening to him. I don't care. Even if I have to be killed myself. They're going to say I'm a rebel against the king. They were people of integrity, and they stood their ground when they saw that there was something wrong. They stood up. Behu be'igeres, this is the redak, this is the letter, Shesholach lo David, that David sent, that Uriachiti should be killed. Hini shahoyushnem tzaddikim imen v'tovim. They were greater. Why? Shedarshu, because they were familiar with the Torah. They knew Achin v'rakin v'hu lo darsh. They were able to learn and infer from even sentence, even words, to be able to deduce that there are exceptions. There's sometimes you don't listen to a king. For example, Kikasha siva sha'olahem lohomus eskohani Hashem, when they commanded that they should kill, that they should be involved in bloodshed, armulahem, so they said, ksiv kol ish asher yamre espicha yumas. Anyone who rebels against the king is going to be sentenced to death. Yochol afil tziva sha'ol labro divri Torah. What happens if a king tells you to commit a crime? Tells you to violate the words of the Torah, which is a book of laws, and not allowed to violate such laws. But Marin, and you rebel. Adam es piv, you rebel based on their direct command. You must. Is it fair for you to be sentenced to death? No. Tom lomar, rak chazak me'amatz, you have to be strong. Yachin v'rakim bu'atim hein. Hini darshu hein b'pasuk kehoigin. They understood the sentence properly. The Amaru Espi Shaul, they rebelled against Shaul. Shalaharu Kahani Hashem, they refused to kill innocent people. The Yoav Lo Darish came. The Yoav never learned this. Kikivan Shishalach LaDavid, once David sent them the letter, L'Sav Misas Uri also came Miad. He did it immediately. So when he saw just a simple letter, even though everyone knew it was wrong for Uriachiti to be killed, it was not right that he was killed on the battlefield, that he was put to the front lines and everyone withdrew, and therefore he was all by himself, and they killed him. That was wrong. So the question is, who was going to carry it out? When it came to these other two people, even though they were directly commanded from the mouth of the king, they refused to listen to him. And I don't care, even if it looks like I'm being more than Malchus, you have no right to tell me to commit a crime. I don't have to violate a crime. If it's something which is wrong to do, I'm not doing it.
That was Avner
and Amasa. Right. However, when it came, says the Radak, to Yoav, not only did he didn't even hear about this, he just received a letter. So he could have easily contested that letter. But instead, he reacted, he responded immediately. Asa came miyad. And as we are now going to see the next pasuk, one of the bigger problems of Asa came miyad is the lack of ability to think. By reacting so quickly shows that you're a person who is filled with emotion, perhaps not as much intellect. You have to constantly be thinking and be aware before you do what you do. Before you say what you're going to say, you have to think about it. Before you do what you're going to do, you have to think about it. So Asakin Miyad is a dangerous person. You don't want a person in a position of power, someone who's Asakin Miyad, that just reacts off the hip, right off the top without putting any thought, just immediately responding. So such a person is dangerous.
Could he have interpreted it that he didn't follow the king's order, he interpreted?
Yeah, but the reason why he was not as not tzaddikim atovim, why he was not as good, is because he should have understood the sentence in the Torah tells us that you're not going to be punished. If you can verify that what he asked you to do was a direct violation of the Torah, then a king has no right to kill you. That's what it's saying. They were able to figure that out from the sentence. And therefore, that's how the Radak understands that they were tzaddikim v'tovim v'minu. They're greater than you because they were able to have greater insight into the Torah than you were able to have. Okay, let's continue. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'shavu demehim barosh Yoav barosh zaru l'olam. And this blood will be upon Yoav and his descendants forever. Even though, again, as we understood this, his children are not going to be, are not punished, but because Yoav died, therefore obviously it's a humiliation to his children. L'David l'zaru l'veso. However, when it comes to David and his descendants, and his household, and his palace, l'kiso his throne, yeshalom ad oilam im Hashem. There will be continual peace from Hashem. And the idea behind why is he saying this is that I'm not going to be punished for doing this. I'm not going to receive any form of punishment for having punished him at all. We'll see that again in Rashi in a couple of sentences. Okay.
But David's children didn't have peace. As soon as Shlomo died, it was already problems. There were more problems.
The kingship was, everything was divided.
You had the curse on Shlomo's.
Right, so maybe that was the idea. Who says, this may answer your original question, who says that he understood that curse, by killing him, that the curse would be transferred over to him? Maybe he didn't think that that's what would happen. And therefore, he felt, Yeshom ad olam, my children will always have peace. Because otherwise, you're right, you'd say, well, if he just accepted the curse, then he should already know that he's not going to have peace. Perhaps it means that by killing him, he didn't really realize that meant that the curse, he just thought maybe the curse just goes away. The curse goes away from him. But the curse, for some reason, gets attached to Shlomo and his descendants. Pasuk Lamedal. V'yal bin Yahu bin Yoyada v'yifkabo v'emisehu. As we said, the sensitive reading of the sentence, bin Yahu didn't kill him. Either he sent someone to kill him, or v'yifkabo, he encountered him. Then he walked, he stabbed him, or whatever it was. Then he walked away. Then he died. Because according to one interpretation, because a Kohen is not allowed to come in contact with a mace, with a dead, so that's why Binyoyah, even though he was appointed to do this because he was a great person, it was Vayifgabo, he stabbed him, or he encountered him, he caused him to be dying, then he withdrew from himself so he wasn't touching him. Mimiseyu, he died.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He knew he was a Kohen. V'kaver b'veso b'midbar. And where did they bury this great leader, this great soldier, this great person, the person who was the head of the Sanhedrin, the person who is just defined as a Chacham Gadol? They buried him in the Midbar. They stuck him in the desert, right? Just like the Mafia, they bury people in the desert, right? That doesn't sound like a very nice, dignified thing to do, that they buried him in the Midbar. So, exactly, I'm just trying to... Right, so that already probably gives us an insight. It sounds, what does that mean? His house was in a desert, which is also difficult to understand because if he was such a powerful person, you would think he would be living not so far away from the king because he would constantly need an order and he would have to be able to get all of his men to disperse and whatnot. So therefore, obviously, I said it in a way just to kind of draw a little bit of interest as to what exactly is means. So if you look at the Radak, right, I just try to make an interesting question. So certainly that cannot be what it means. So there's numerous answers. If you look in the Radak, we're going to see the third to last line, toward the end of the third line, it says Vishbo Drash. Then in parentheses it quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It says, well, he wasn't buried really in the desert, but it's painting a little more of a picture of the type of person that he was. The house was like a desert. How is a person's house like a desert? It's like, because there's no food in your house, it's empty, your cupboards are bare. No. Says the Radak, Ma Midbar Zeh, Just like when it comes to, you go into the middle of the desert, mufgril hakol. Right? If a person wants to build a house in the desert, no problem. You can go to the desert, no one's going to chase you away, you can go there and feel comfortable there, not a problem. Everyone who wants to go into the desert, feel free. No one is going to call the cops for trespassing, walking around in the Sahara Desert. You can do that all you want. So what? So says the Radaf, says the Gemara, the second wide line, Af beso shel Yoav, so too when it came to Yoav's home, mufgur l'chol, it was ownerless to everyone, ki nediv hoyim od, because he was a nediv lev, he was a very generous person, which means, just like a midbar, anyone can walk into the desert, so too it's giving a perspective of the greatness of Yoav and his household, his spouse, his household, that he had an open door policy. He was involved in Hachnasas Orachim par excellence. He was the greatest person in inviting people. People felt comfortable. They needed some food. They needed a place to sleep. His doors were always, always open. That's what it means that he was Beso Bamidbar. His house was in the desert. It doesn't mean he was buried in the desert. It's just discussing where his family upbringing was, having an open door policy of always having people for Shabbos and always having people sleeping over and making them comfortable. That's one interpretation. The Radaf then says, Dabar Acher, Ma Midbar Zeh, just like a desert, is Menuka Megezel, is clean from stealing, because a person wants to steal something, you break into someone's house, you steal their flat screen TV, their DVD, you don't go into the desert and steal sand? There's nothing to steal. There's nothing there. Af beso shel Yoav menuka megezel. Yoav, even though he was involved in potentially plundering and taking things after he was victorious in numerous battles, if you would go into his home, you will not find a single thing that was not rightfully his. Just like a midbar. That was the greatness of Yoav. So you can say, so why is it necessary for us to learn all these different things? Because he's being killed, he did something wrong. But you should not just paint the picture that this person is a Rasha, it's a terrible person. The Torah specifically shows the greatest of tzaddikim that make mistakes. And Rishayim are people that are punished, but there are good sides as well. There are shades of gray to everyone. And just to say, oh, this is a bad person, is a very superficial way of looking at a person.
Maybe
and
that,
this could have been some certainly a kapara of some sort for sure, absolutely. Let's just look at this last part of the Radak. Davar Acher, and he quotes a Talmud Yerushalmi, v'chiba midbar hoya. You think he was really in the desert? That's where he was brought up. El kivan shineherag nasu Yisrael kamidbar. It's an unbelievable sentence. What is said in the Yerushalmi? Which is, and just translate what the words are. That as soon as he died, the question is, why do we need to know how great of a, you know, all the bread and the steaks and all the things that he gave to his guests? Now, he's dead. Like, it's not really the best time to go and visit someone because he's not there anymore. He died. He was killed. So why do I need to know at his death about the midbar, the comparing to the desert? So he says, because you have to understand, this is a great man. This is one of the most scholarly people that ever walked the face of this earth. This was a head of the Sanhedrin, a person who was involved in litigation and being involved in the judicial system. This is not some simple person. And therefore, when he died, when he was killed, Nasu Yisrael Kamidbar, the Jews became like a desert. Which means when you're in a desert, you're dying for thirst. The basic necessities you have not at your fingertips. You're lacking things. They sense the tremendous loss of Yoav as soon as he died. And therefore, that's the reason why he was compared to a midbar. Let's just conclude with one sentence, because then we'll see Shimi next week. Pasuk Lamed Hey, V'yitin ha-melech es Ben-Yoav Ben-Yoyada tach-tov al-hatzava. So they placed Ben-Yoav Ben-Yoyada, one who just was involved in taking Yoav's life. Now he is the commander of the army. This Tzadok HaKohen when it came to Tzadokah Kohen, Nasan HaMelech Tachas Evyasar. Instead of Evyasar, who was the Kohen, the great Kohen, now he was removed to that position, and Tzadokah Kohen has it now instead. Stop here.